The Or HaChaim HaKadosh is in Perek Chaf Beis. It's on Pasuk Chaf Dalet. So Chaf Beis, Chaf Dalet in Parshas Mishpatim. The Pasuk says like this. Does anybody want to take a crack at reading it for us? It's a tricky Pasuk because that's what the Or HaChaim is commenting on. The Pasuk says, Im Kesef Talveh Es Ami. Im Kesef Talveh Es Ami. So what's Talveh? What's a Loveh? Right, so talaveh is the causative, so it causes to borrow, so mean you're going to lend. So if you're going to lend money to my nation, im kesef, what's im? If. Sounds like if. So im kesef talaveh esami. So if you lend money to my nation, es he'ani imach, to, how do you translate? Es he'ani imach.
To the poor woman.
It's interesting, it doesn't say li'ani. It says es ha'ani, the. S is a funny word to translate. It's one of those connector. The poor person, imach. Im, you. Yeah, amongst you or with you, right? Im with, right? So again, say so if you lend my nation to the poor that's among you, I mean, I guess it's always possible to lend money to the people that aren't poor. So it is a terror.
Does im have to be it?
Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Like the poor people.
Right. I guess nothing, right? Why don't you just start saying im kesef talveh la'ani? If you lend money to a poor person. That's really the point. I mean, is that... I don't... Yes, obviously poor people need money, and it's best to lend it to them instead of just giving them tzedaka. Right? It's a higher level of tzedaka that feel dignity getting their money. But at the same time, I mean, anybody know anyone that has a mortgage? That's lending money. I mean, right? So there are lots of people that are not poor, and they're borrowing money all the time for business reasons, for buying a house. I mean. So the truth of the matter is, it certainly is possible to lend money to someone, and they're not poor. So in Kesef Talveh Esami, when you lend money to my nation, it's not necessarily going to be to a poor person. So Torah specifies, Esani Imah, to the poor person. Because the point of the pasuk is, you're not allowed to charge interest, you're not allowed to oppress him in any way to return it. So the focus of the pasuk is on the oppression of the poor ani after you lend him money. So there's a better way to write this pasuk, right? I'm just correcting Kadosh Baruch Hu because, you know, I'm a Hebrew teacher, so I'm going to correct Kadosh Baruch Hu's paper here, and let's cross some things out and fix it. Kasher talveh es ha'ani. Fair enough? When you lend money to the poor. Wouldn't that make the point nice and straightforward with a few less words? When you lend money to the poor. Not when you lend money to someone in my nation, I mean a poor person, right? I mean, do you think it's a good question or not a good question?
I had to fill
word. Right, that's the problem, is that the paper had to be 1,000 words, and so we had to add a few. I mean, it's a good question, you think? Yeah, with me?
I do that
all the time. So the Or HaChaim is bothered by that. First of all, everybody discusses what it means, im. It's not optional. There are lots of, usually im means if, so you don't have to. But when it comes to tzedaka, it's not like that. You have to lend money. So this is one of those ims that's not really optional. And Rashi quotes other places where that occurs.
Is im, can that also be good?
When?
Not with an al.
Okay, but the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says the reason why the Torah says es ha'ani imach is not just to straighten up, to fix the bad language that the Torah used a minute ago. I didn't mean if you're lending money to anyone. I meant only specifically to the poor person. No, the Torah is saying, I want you to know a principle. Es ha'ani imach. What?
Is this related to the parsha?
Is this? It's in the Aliyah from yesterday.
I mean, in the
parsha,
saying that you should first help someone that you hate before there's someone that you
hate. Today's Aliyah, correct.
So, is that related?
Not sure. Perhaps. But, because it doesn't say here he's a sone, it doesn't say you hate him or anything like that. But he's poor. See, Or HaChaim HaKadosh sees great significance
And the Torah's phrase, Es he'ani imach. This idea of Aruch Hayim HaKadosh is one of the most critical ideas in Staka that you will ever hear. The rest of your lives, Mirtz Hashem, you'll be making lots of money. I give you bracha, you should make lots of money. And do the right thing with it. And one of the most important things to do with it is to give Meiser. If you can, give 20%. But if you can't, at least 10. And to keep track of it carefully. A lot of people have trouble giving Meiser because it's your money. And it's hard to give away your money.
Are you obligated to give Meiser technically when you're in college? Because, like, we don't pass
study jobs. So I will be 100% honest with you. There is a mitzvah to give tzedakah. How much tzedakah to give? Deraisa, there's no such thing really as an amount.
Yeah, right.
The concept of Meiser is a minig that Kalal Yisrael observes, that we try to give away 10% and we try to keep that as a standard. If it's possible to get 20%, that's even better.
I feel like tzedakah is a little different than Meiser, though. Meiser is like 10% of all your earnings. Tzedakah is like any amount.
Correct.
It doesn't have to be
10%. So one can be Yotzei tzedakah with a small, small amount. And everyone needs to be Yotzei the mitzvah of tzedakah. Meiser is what we try to do. When Rav Schachter says that when a person's in a situation where it's really not feasible, so then he's not under the obligation to give Meiser. Yeah.
Is tzedakah like a daily thing that we should be doing, or is there a different, like, specific?
It's not really a mitzvah by the day. It's really a mitzvah by the occurrence. And that's sort of how Meiser helps us, is that at some point, which there's no specific time when you have to evaluate it, but at some point, a person should evaluate, at least by the end of the year, person should be evaluating how much Meiser he owes and then gives it either to Torah institutions or to poor people specifically. The person, when he does start to work and starts to get a job and starts to observe the minig of Meiser, should make a condition, in, at least in his mind, if not verbally, and say, I'm not always going to give it specifically to poor people. I'm leaving my Meiser open for Torah, for various mitzvah purposes, so that he doesn't end up making a chumrah for himself, that he only gives it to the poor and then can't give it to other institutions. What were you going to say?
Does Meiser necessarily apply to us?
Meiser applies, but like I said, Meiser is a minhag, probably. Most likely Meiser is considered to be a minhag. No, that means it's binding as a minig, but minhagim apply when minhagim apply. And minhagim don't apply to people that are not financially able to accomplish it. Everyone has to give tzedakah, even a poor person.
Money, the 10% and 20% rule doesn't apply to tzedakah.
Right. So that's on top of tzedakah, on top of what we're supposed to do. You're Yotzei the mitzvah of tzedakah. If you give a dollar of 100, so then you're Yotzei the mitzvah of tzedakah, but you don't fulfill the minhag of Meiser.
Is there like a minimum?
No, not really. Oh, for Meiser? Meiser literally means 10%.
So it'd be $10.
No, I get that, but I'm saying, hey, if you made like $10 and you gave a dollar,
that's Meiser.
Would that be considered Meiser?
That is. That's 10%. No, then that's 10%. That's the minig of Meiser. There's another minig to give 20%. So if a person
should really differentiate from tzedakah, is it like a whole, like, you kind of what
tzedakah is an obligation to help out the poor with what they need. And theoretically, it could be whatever a person needs. Let's say a person happens to be very wealthy, and he's really the only one that can help this particular ani, for whatever reason. It doesn't really work like this anymore. But in the olden days, when there would be poor people of the city and there would be one very wealthy fellow who kind of supports the poor people of the city or something like that. So then technically, he would probably be obligated to make sure that the poor person has all his needs taken care of. Nowadays, because the world is different and poor people don't rely on one wealthy fellow, they go around asking money from the whole world. So then one does not have that type of obligation to make sure that he takes care of all the poor person's needs.
Somebody,
he gives him something. What do you say again?
Does somebody have to declare it as being...
No. No.
So I'm saying one, like, if you would give 10% one time, would that be it? How did the...
The minhag of Meiser is 10% of your profits.
Understood. But, like,
you have no profit, so there's no chiyuv ma'aser. There's no chiyuv ma'aser on things that are, you already have in your pocket. Whatever's in your bank account, whatever you made it at some point. Let's say a kid turns 13. So first time he ever made money in his life is his bar mitzvah money. So okay, that's his profit. So he should give 10% of his bar mitzvah money to ma'aser.
And is that like, okay, I fulfilled my ma'aser obligation?
That's it. From, until there's new profit, until there's new income.
Oh, for every profit.
Correct.
Or you could just see how all your checks for like a few months or a year, even, and just give them.
And make a calculation of ma'aser later at whatever point you make it. But it's on profits. That's.
I feel like that would be harder.
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I learn this because, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu puts us all in all sorts of very interesting situations in our lives. And we say to ourselves, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu do this to me? So for about a year, I guess for a year, I was relegated to the role of the academic advisor for the yeshiva. And I ended up doing a lot of technical things, and one of them was I had to learn Excel. So I learned a lot. So now I keep my income for the purposes of Ma'aser calculated on a spreadsheet. And so as income comes in, I take it from the bank, cut and paste onto the spreadsheet, and then make all kinds of calculations based on that. So it's very simple. Baruch Hashem, very easy to do.
So we're not obligated, but we could.
It's an obligation as a minig, as a minig. But the minig is applicable when a person is financially capable to do it.
And there's no minimum amount.
Tzedakah. Tzedakah, there's no minimum. Ma'aser, there's a minimum.
It's 10%. Say make a dollar.
Oh, right. Yeah, 10% of the dollar. Okay, 10%. Right.
Yeah, so
10%. Right.
You get a dollar.
It happens. It happens. You know, I want to try to keep track of Ma'aser, right? So what happens when I get some kind of cash or something like that, and I know that I'm going to forget to keep track of it? So either, nowadays, we all have our smartphones, you put it straight into your Google Doc, or you give Ma'aser right away, which is one of the things I like to do in those types of situations.
Yeah.
I have Quick Pay with Chase, and my shul has two different funds basically going on right now. There's my own, what we call the discretionary fund. There's also money that you can just give straight to the shul that counts for Ma'aser. When I get a paycheck from the shul, right away I give 10% straight back to the shul. No, then I'll have to give Ma'aser from it. Think about it. This is an important point. FYI. Oh, let me ask you a question. I'll ask you a question. Is it better to give tzedakah like once a year in like one lump sum, or to do it again and again and again and again and again and again? It would be a lesser amount. Why? So that's one. From a practical perspective, you're continuously supporting people is one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, take this aliyah from today, for example. Some say that the idea of you see your enemy, your enemy's donkey is crumbling under his load. So you have to help fix the load to help the donkey. Tsar Baalei Chaim is one of the sources for Tsar Baalei Chaim. That you have to take away pain. You're not allowed to cause pain. To try to take away pain, even from animals. Is that because we care so much about the animals? Or is it because we have to be sensitive people? So there may be care for the animals, that may be true. But more fundamentally, is that we have to learn to be sensitive people.
Yeah,
give you a crazy example.
Mm-hmm.
What? You're going to kill the donkey? I can't eat the donkey. But I'll give you another example where this seems to be pretty obvious. What does anybody know when a person goes to a cemetery? What do we do with our tzitzis? Tuck them in. Why?
Because you don't want the dead to be.
You don't want to insult the dead people, right? I want to insult the dead people.
Which
is that because the dead people get insulted?
Yes.
No, it can't be.
So the Gemara has a fascinating.
Right.
They're going to be jealous.
Why are you instigating?
Are they paying close attention? Can they see through the dirt? What if they already decomposed them? So it's an interesting idea. I will tell you this. The Gemara in Bracha seems to have two different approaches to this. When the Gemara asks, do the dead people really know what's happening in the world? And then whereas these stories, the Gemara goes into, there was a guy who got thrown out of his wife and him got into a fight. And he went to sleep in the cemetery. Most people that get thrown out of their house don't go to sleep in the cemetery. They probably find a friend's house or some other place a little more comfortable. So that's how the Gemara starts. I think it's the Gemara starts at who chassid. It was a certain chassid that got thrown out of his house. I don't know why a chassid is getting thrown out of his house. But Rav Asher Zell Grubenstein pointed out that he went to sleep in the cemetery because he wanted to give himself musr. Maybe he felt he deserved to be dead. So he overheard that night in the cemetery these voices talking about what's going to be with the stock market the next year, or the produce, the products, the rain, you know, the farming the next year. And he listened and he followed what they said, and everybody else's crops got decimated and his were very successful. So the next year, even though he was doing better with his wife, he slept in the cemetery anyway on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and the same thing happened. Until finally, his wife got into a fight with the mother of one of the spirits that he heard talking, because she had been buried in a mat of reeds, and she couldn't like get out of this very strange gemara, and so her neshama couldn't freely fly wherever it wanted to go, and so she made fun of the mother by saying, "Yeah, well, your daughter's buried in a mat of reeds." And the next year, when he came to sleep in the cemetery to find out about stocks again, so he overheard the spirit saying, "Sorry, we can't do this anymore. We're being heard by the living." So the Gemara says, "Oh, you see, they know what's going on in the world." And the Gemara says, "How do you know? Maybe someone died and told her." So the Gemara is not convinced that the dead really know what's going on in the world. So the Gemara has two possible conclusions. Either they don't know, or they know, they just don't care. No, the Gemara's story is 100%. Yeah.
Oh my God, that story, that was all over the place.
Anyway, but what's the point? Let's try to get this all back together. The point is that the Gemara has a pretty clear conclusion that either the dead people don't know what's happening in the world, or they do know, but it doesn't bother them anymore. They don't care because they're living in the world, in the Olam HaEmes.
How would they hear about it? They have like Olam HaBa news?
Oh, is that news you mean?
No, like news over there, like talks about what's going on over here.
Why would spirits?
That's one of the things the Gemara says, is they only know from when people die and they tell them things.
But are they generally?
Is that what they're talking about?
I didn't realize I was opening up a Pandora's box here. All I wanted to say was that it's funny, because how can we have a halacha loeg larush? They're not allowed to make fun of the poor, meaning the dead, by having your tzitzis drag on their graves if they don't know or they don't care. That's the question I wanted to bring out.
Is going to be like, "Oh yeah, all those people are..."
I still get to do mitzvahs, and poor me, I'm stuck without doing mitzvahs. It's not fair, it's not right. I wish I could do mitzvahs, I'm jealous.
What do you mean? How they can get jealous?
Because they can't do any more mitzvahs. But they can't do any more mitzvahs, they're stuck.
But why would they want to do mitzvahs if they're like... You know?
Yeah.
Because imagine that there's more to go. And you can't get farther. Imagine standing straight in front of a glass window with all the jewels and gold and riches you want. And in your lifetime, had you just learned Night Seder every night, you'd be in there. You'd be in there with it. It'd be yours. But because you never went to Night Seder, it's a glass window. It says, "Sorry, you're not allowed in."
And that's it. You're stuck forever.
Yeah.
That's how it happens.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Can I just learn by myself?
No.
You can, but for our purposes, it's a story.
I'll take a video.
The only exception to that is that if a person set certain things in motion in their lifetime, then they do get the continual credit for it afterwards. So a person has children and sends them to a Jewish school, and for the rest of their lives, the children are learning Torah. That's a credit to the parents. Kaddish is based on that principle. So when there's a kid of Shem Shamayim in this world because of the parents get a zechus because of that. But otherwise, a person gets to where he gets and he's stuck. If you remember from the Sunday shiurim last semester, I gave the example of building a home. When a person is in this world, he's building his home in Olam HaBa. Chavos HaLevavos has a whole story about these two guys, and they were wandering around in the desert or who knows where, and all of a sudden they were approached by the closest town. The townspeople said, "Hi! We have an interesting minig around here that we choose kings. And it can't be anyone that comes from the city. And we see you're passing by. You've been elected to be our kings. You be king on this city, on the side of the river. You get to be king on the side of the river." Wow, this is amazing. So they both get to become kings. And they are told by their trusty number one advisor, "Psst, I just want you to know, the way it works around here is that you've got a year. And they throw you out." Oh. You have a year to be king, and then they throw you out. And they find someone else. That's how they found you. But they're not going to tell you that. Thank you for telling me. One of them took it to heart and spent that year getting rich, was the king, waging wars, whatever, gaining all kinds of wealth, and shipped it home. Anything he got, he shipped home. He didn't dress in fancy clothes and buy new things. And he just, whatever he had, he had. Everything that was an income, he sent away home. The other guy wanted to live it up. And he lived it up. He built up the palace. He built up his possessions. He drove a Lamborghini. Like, everything, he, mamish, lived the life for the year. And then, of course, what happened? The year was up, and sure enough, they said, hey, goodbye and good luck. They threw them both out of the city. And now they met each other again. It's like, wow. One guy says to the other, Baruch Hashem, I'm going home and I can't wait. And that guy's all depressed. His life is finished because he had everything. Now he's got nothing again. It's like, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you prepare your provisions for the future? He says, I was busy living it up. He says, Echov HaSalababas, that's our life. We live here and we're building our home in the next world. We have an opportunity here to build that home. Whatever we built, we will live in Olam Haba. And that's all we'll have. The leaky roof, whatever we didn't fix in our life, will be like that in Olam Haba. And whatever furniture, whatever furnishings, whatever we did, we will have eternally in Olam Haba. But that's the way it works. So the Mesem, so Agmar says, either they don't know or they don't care, because they're living in their world, that they don't really care what's going on in our world anymore. So if that's true, then who cares if you drag your tzitzis on their grave?
So what is there, like, people Torah there also? Because, like, somebody starts talking about the stock market over here.
Wait, what do you mean? I don't understand.
Like, I would assume, in all about, like, they're all just, you know?
No, they hear the decree for the world there. Is that what you mean?
No, but you just...
Like, how do they know about the stock market?
You said, like, somebody dies, they come up, like, oh, this new Lamborghini came out.
No, so that they don't care about. That's what it means they don't care.
They know, and then what is the guy's like, shh.
No, it may be like it's insignificant. But the decree on Rosh Hashanah is the decree of what's going to be the coming year. So they hear the announcements. So that's how these spirits were able to relate the announcements, you know, and the guy was able to hear it. What's the decree for the new year? Wait, let me finish the point. So then what's the point of not dragging your tzitzis on their graves?
Be a sensitive
person. Right, that's the answer, right? Because it's for us, it's not for them. Same thing, Tzar Bali Chaim. Tzar Bali Chaim, okay, it's true, it's nice to be sensitive to the animals, but at the end of the day, it's about us building our midos. It's about us building our midos. What's your question?
What about Shiloh HaKen, right? And
yeah.
Do we do today?
Yeah, I did it myself.
Yeah, I don't know, so I did it, whatever, it doesn't matter, but like...
Is it like forced?
It goes against Tzar Bali Chaim. It contradicts it.
Why?
Sending away the mother.
Right.
You feel better.
You're taking your kid.
You're doing the mitzvah. That's like the opposite.
You're taking your kid.
We discussed this once in the past. I think there's a shir that we did discuss the whole concept of shulach haken and whatnot. And many mefarshim learned that the basic gist of the mitzvah is to send a message to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu, look how much the mother cares for her children. You know, that's how much you should care for us. There are various messages to that. But I hear what you're saying. But that's one of the reasons that you want to shoo away the mother before you take the eggs. Okay, but in any case.
Isn't it like when you're going to take the eggs anyway?
If you want, I mean, there's a mitzvah to take the eggs. It seems like you can be a kayim the mitzvah even if you don't really need the eggs. I had a ma'aseh shehaya, we have a deck in my backyard, and there was a nest on one of the beams on the deck. So the truth of the matter is, you can't fulfill the mitzvah shiloh haken on property that's owned by someone. It has to be a hefker area. Because it says, ki yikra kan tzipor, when you happen upon it, but not something that's already there. So, there's a machlokas, a poskim, if it helps to be mafkir it after it's already there. But I figured I'll take my chances. So I went to shul, got a few people together, and I said, I am mafkir the bottom of my deck. Whoever wants to use it, put stuff there, use it, you're more than welcome to come to my house and keep stuff underneath my deck on any of those beams. It's totally fine. It is hefker. So then...
Did you tell them why? Or you just said
yeah, no, I told them why. But it didn't matter because it's hefker either way. No, still hefker. So if any bird decides to make a nest there, it's automatically hefker now. And now, but the beams under the deck. See, if you ever need to keep anything there, yeah. So then what did we do? So we went that night because it was robins. Robins were not 100% sure if they're kosher birds or not, but they have all the signs of a kosher bird. So
I thought birds don't have signs.
They don't in the Torah. In the Torah, you have to know which kind of bird it is. But Chazal say, since we don't always know all the names and definitions of all the birds, there are signs to tell whether they're predatory or not. And so those signs indicate whether it's kosher or not. But you're right. You have to actually know which kind of bird is kosher and which kind is not.
Wait, so
Sign's really only for not for for, and, for so land animals. We're not 100% sure, so we don't eat them. Not that they seem like they have so much meat, but they have all the signs of kosher birds. So, we went, apparently, those scientists that know about birds know that it's the male bird, that robins, that sit on the eggs during the day, and it's the female at night. Go figure. So, you have to wait until night to shoo away the mother bird, otherwise it might be the father. With a robin? A robin? Sometimes only robins. Robins have the blue eggs. They're the ones that have the orange chest. It's okay, so it's probably something else. So, yeah. I can show you a video if you want later. In any case, so, you know, you shoo away the mother, and she flies away, and then you take the eggs. I didn't want the eggs, so I just picked them up at Tefach, and then I put them back and was mafkir them again the next day.
So then don't they belong back to the mother the next day?
Well, they don't belong to that bird. The bird doesn't own anything. But the bird does come back, by the way. It came back.
Yeah, when you do the mitzvah, yeah, the bird does come back. Are you allowed to do it again? Like, does someone else want to do the mitzvah again?
If the egg is hefker. So you should really try to do a different egg, or at least be mafkir the eggs. But
I would understand if, like, you need the egg.
It's not that crazy. You put the
so
egg
that's why, according to many Mepharshim, it's not that you need the eggs. It's
you put the egg back.
It's about the message. Yeah. It's about the message.
I mean, you could eat it.
Yeah, you can keep the eggs. You don't have to put the eggs back. I just have no need for robin eggs. I'm going to do robin eggs. Okay, in any case, what I wanted to tell you, how did we get into this tangent about this? How did we get into this? Oh, Tzedaka! What's better, to give a lump sum or little by little by little? So the answer is you change yourself when you continuously give Tzedaka. That's how we got into all of this. We're constantly working on ourselves, just like Tzar Bali Chaim, just like not wearing your tzitzis in a cemetery, tucking them in. So all of those are examples when we're not necessarily just sensitive to the other thing, is that we need to work on sensitivity ourselves. And therefore, when a person continuously gives tzedakah more and more, it has an impact on him. So it is a good idea to give tzedakah on a regular basis. But what does the pasuk mean when it says, es ha'ani imach, that the poor person's with you? Says Yor Chaim HaKadosh. When you lend money, and we're talking about in this context, this pasuk to the poor, I want you to know, if you have enough money to give to the ani, you ready for this? Es ha'ani imach. Es ha'ani imach. The poor person's money is with you.
As if you have his money.
You have his money. That's what the pasuk is trying to say. Again, why do we come to this conclusion? How does Yor Chaim HaKadosh say this? Because the pasuk is totally convoluted. Don't say when you lend money to someone, oh, by the way, I mean the ani. Just say it then. The answer is no. I'm talking about lending money. I want you to know that when you have money that's extra, you have money that you don't need it. Why do you have it? The answer is es ha'ani imach. Don't view that money like it's yours. It's not. It's been given to you to give to the ani. And if you view your extra money like that, then you know that you're just there to safeguard it. You're supposed to be there. You have a responsibility. You are Kadosh Baruch Hu's shaliach to give that money to the ani. Yeah. So I will tell you this. I have had personal situations where it's been very disappointing. I once had this, I told you this, I think, right? I had a guy who came to me in Washington Heights.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. You investigated.
He was a scammer, but I gave him money. I felt bad. I called the cops and they said, sir, did you give the money willingly or did he mug you? I said, I gave him the money, but he tricked me. He lied to me, stole from me. They said, sorry, sir, if you willingly give away your money, there's nothing that we can do. Wow. So then there's a YouTube video of this guy. He's a scammer. So you have to know, when someone comes to you with a bizarre story and he's wandering around, you know, the subway or Washington Heights, he's a scammer.
Bro, what you
it's always true.
Do you think
it's true. Anybody that really eats stucco is going to go to some kind of stucco organization or find out about the stucco organization, and they're going to do it right, and they're going to figure out how to get, you know, the money to support them.
I can't
hear. What?
What about the people that don't say stories? Like, just the people that just ask for money. They're not saying anything. I just like passing them money.
Everybody knows you're like the red string woman at the Kaisel, you know, she's got like an apartment buildings or something. You know, like...
I'm not talking about, like, someone that's
some people are just wandering around and they're just like asking for money. Some people don't even ask, they just have like something.
It depends, you know.
Which means the guy that gives you a prayer card and then you're supposed to look at it and then give him back prayer
card. Apparently, one of you yourself doesn't count.
I don't know.
Why did Jesus pray?
All I can tell you is the following. I've had a lot of experiences with people that I know are definitely not sincere. And you can usually tell because they've got a story and it's always the same story and everybody's got the same story. So, what I do is I give very, very minimally to any of these people that like come to the door and this, that, and the other thing. And I have a stack of funds in my shul. I have one thing I have is my discretionary fund, which I get to decide where it goes to. So if I know the people involved, then I know I have confidence. And the other thing is that we have an account, basically, a fund for people in Beitar, in Eretz Israel. There, I have people that I know in Beitar that I trust. So that's also something that we do. If you want, you can give me, and I will forward it to whichever one you want. I feel that these things are legit because the discretionary fund is me and the Beitar fund are people that I trust. So, but otherwise I give very, very minimally to other things because I don't have the confidence. I don't remember all the details. He told me that he was on his way to work and that he left his wallet at home and he needs to get back and his car this, that, and the other thing, or he was on the train. I don't know. They all have a story. It's all a stir, but it's all a shekel.
Was he a Yid?
He looked like one. He claimed he was. I don't know. Yeah, and Yamka.
He knew.
Yeah, because he picked her up. Anyway, the vort is that we are all Mirtz Hashem going to make lots of money, and we're all Mirtz Hashem going to do the right thing with that money, and we need to know that the money that we're given in excess of what we need is there for other reasons. Maybe we're just supposed to hold on to it and it'll go birusha to our children. But one of the things we need to know is at least when it comes to Maiser, there's a certain amount that's put in our pocket if it is additional. Again, sometimes a person, unfortunately, is in a situation where they need the money and they are not in a position to give Maiser. But when a person is, so you should know that that is not your money. It's not your money. You are an ATM machine. And when the ani comes and says, I'd like to take out money, so imagine the ATM machine saying, I'm sorry, I'm not in the mood. So ATM machines are not supposed to work like that. ATM machines just give you your money because it's yours. And that's the way we need to look at our money when we make it, or that there's a certain amount that's there that is not yours. And if you really think about it that way, and as Racham Kodesh says, that's the pasuk, es he'ani imach. The ani's money is in your pocket. It's there for him, not for you. And when you look at that, look at it that way, it becomes a lot easier to part with it. Because it isn't really yours to begin with. Powerful idea, it's an important idea.